Thank you, Chair Wall. I will just make a brief statement that I voted against the increase that we approved, and I still think that it's inappropriate given the fiscal climate we face, and I'm hoping we will reconsider that in full finance, but I will remove my objection for the purposes of the discussion in full finance.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Adrian.
I'm maintaining objection.
I'm sorry, Representative Carpenter. Can you repeat that?
I just said I maintain my objection.
Okay, thank you. We have a comment from Representative Edgman.
Yeah, my comment is in passing, and it's not fully informed, but I thought it would be of note maybe to discuss later on the full Finance Committee. And I just caught a snippet of this in the Finance Committee from the other body that the actual compact may have some impact on the maintenance of effort funding from the university vis-a-vis federal funds.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Any other member comments? Okay, I will thank you for mentioning the maintenance of effort as I did earlier. So I think we may have some issues to look at, especially if you want federal funding, which there seems to be an abundance of right now. Objection is maintained. Ms. Carrick, will you call the roll?
Representative Merrick.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
5 yeas, 2 nays.
With a vote of, I counted 6 yeas and 2 nays.
6 yeas and 2 nays.
This subcommittee narrative and report is adopted. And with that, it is
7 yeas, 2 nays. Right?
Oh, you didn't ask me.
Representative, oh gosh.
I will vote yay.
Sorry, I don't have a pen with me right now.
I didn't count my own vote. I figured I was too, but I'm glad to be on the record as a yes. With a vote of 7 yeas and 2 nays, the budget narrative and report is adopted. Thank you. And if there's no more comments, I will adjourn this meeting at 1:45.
I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 2:01 p.m. on Friday, March 26, 2021. Present in the room today are Representative Lebon, Representative Ortiz, Representative Foster, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson. Online we have Representative Carpenter and myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon we will continue hearing House Bill 128, Use of Internet for Charitable Gambling, and hold the first hearing on House Bill 27, naming the Irene Weber Bridge. We will hear public testimony on both bills. The committee first heard House Bill 128 on March 18th. Representative Fields, can you briefly reintroduce the bill?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Zach Fields, House District 20, and Tristan Walsh, my staff. And House Bill 128 ensures that charitable gaming operators, i.e. our charities and their operators, can sell raffle tickets online, which is extends an authority that was established by regulation for the pandemic, but which has been shown to be beneficial, certainly in a pandemic, but in all circumstances.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Edgman. Next, we'll hear an overview of the fiscal note by Connor Bell from Legislative Finance. Connor, are you available?
For the record, this is Connor Bell with Legislative Finance.
Thank you, Connor. Can you go over the fiscal note for us, please?
Through the chair, yes. So basically, this bill would allow for certain charitable gaming activities to be conducted online. The department would need to establish standards for online ticket sales and guidelines otherwise, as far as for the Department of Revenue. They do not expect any change in revenues or change in operating expenditures. They believe they can, with current resources and staffing, be able to make these changes. And while there may be some revenue impact, the total revenue impact to the state for charitable gaming is about $500,000 per year, and so this impact would probably be, if any, would be relatively small as far as to the state revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. I'd like to recognize we were joined by Representative Wool at 2:03 p.m. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thanks for the recognition. Mr. Bell, the state revenue you said is $500,000 from is that all charitable gaming?
Mr. Bell?
Through the chair, yes, I believe so, at least net of expenses related to the administration of the tax. So it is not different than the gross receipts.
We've now been joined by Ms. Glover with the tax division. Ms. Glover, and would you like to comment?
I apologize. Through the chair, the total, as far as the unrestricted revenue of charitable gaming in total, it, according to the Department of Revenue, is about $2.4 million in 2020.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm having a hard time hearing everything you say, but you said total revenue is $2.4 million, and then you net, after you pay expenses, $500,000, is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe Director Glover would be able to speak better to this, but according to the fiscal note, my understanding of the fiscal note prepared by the department, yes, that is correct.
Ms. Glover?
Yeah, this is Colleen Glover for the record. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
So for the annual proceeds for all charitable gaming, for the state revenue is about 2.4, 2.5 million. The bulk of that revenue is from pool tab taxes that account for typically close to 2 million of that 2.5. This bill does not impact the pool tab tax at all or pool tabs. And so the other revenue to the state includes a net proceeds fee, which is a net proceeds on proceeds over $20,000, and then there's license and permit fees. Those two together are about $500,000 per year. So if this bill passes, those would be the only proceeds that would be impacted by this.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, Ms. Glover, if there's suddenly a surge in raffles, ticket sales, because now everyone can buy a ticket online and it's really convenient, and there's a great increase in raffles and these kinds of things, well, you're saying it's not going to really make a dent in any state revenue. Is that correct?
Rep. Wolf, through the chair, it would be a pretty significant increase in the total proceeds from raffles to make a significant change to state revenues, correct?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions?
Oh, I have one more, sorry.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. You mentioned pull tabs. What about bingo? How big of a player is bingo in the charitable gaming world at the state revenue side?
Rep. Wolf, through the chair, the bingo is a portion of that $500,000 revenue. So, bingos make up actually a smaller percentage of the gaming than raffles. So raffles outside of pull tabs are about 55% of all revenue, and that they have that tax just on pull tabs. Besides that, raffles make up about 22% of all the net proceeds. Bingo is about 10% of net proceeds, so you know, roughly 10% maybe of that 500,000 is from bingo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wolf. Further questions? Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess since we're talking revenue, the nonprofit community that participates in bingo or whatever the gaming event may be, realizes quite a significant benefit from this. And I know from my tenure on the Fairbanks Downtown Association, we were one of the beneficiaries of a downtown bingo operation. So do you have any insight as to how much of a benefit it is to the nonprofit community?
Thanks, through the chair, Representative LeBon. Anecdotally, we heard that some nonprofits actually more than doubled their income on certain events, even during a pandemic, which I thought was surprising in a good way. And I hope that that tends to be the case more broadly as they have this authority. But I think only time will tell if we can see those kind of gains on a sustained basis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative LeBon. Further questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony on HB 128. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online that would like to testify? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. I'd like to note amendments for House Bill 128 will be due to my office by Sunday, March 28th at noon. It is my intention to take up amendments on Monday and pass the bill from committee if possible. Thank you, Representative Fields. We will take a brief at ease to transfer to the next presentation.
Thank you.
The committee will now be hearing House Bill 27, naming the Irene Weber Bridge. Sarah Perman from Speaker Stutz's office, if you could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation, please.
Through the chairs, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Perman, and I'm a legislative aide for Representative Stutz. Before you today is House Bill 27. This three-line bill simply renames an unidentified bridge in Cordova, known formally to the Department of Transportation as Bridge 406 Scott Glacier Number 6, to the Irene Weber Bridge. Irene Weber was a Cordovan who passed away in 2018, and naming this bridge after her will serve to remind her Cordovan friends and neighbors of the legacy she leaves behind. I'd like to take a moment quickly to share a bit about Irene with the members of the committee. Irene was an Aleutic woman born in Elamar near Tetitlik. She later moved to Cordova, where she raised her family. There, she and her husband and three children ran a seining operation in Prince William Sound. Irene is probably best remembered as an avid runner. However, she wasn't a lifelong runner. She began running as an adult. Earlier in life, Irene struggled with alcohol dependency, and as she got sober, she turned to running. Her daughter, Kim, shared with me that running empowered and invigorated her mom. And in pursuing her passion, she founded the Cordova Running Club and was integral in founding many of the local running events. She's probably best remembered for running and founding the Seoul King Salmon Marathon in 1986. She decided to run it and did a full marathon length. And now, 35 years later, in addition to the King Salmon Marathon, there is now the Sockeye Half Marathon, the Coho 10K, the Humpy 5K, and the Smooth 1 Mile Fun Run. And this is all a series of the Cordova Salmon Runs, which 200 to 300 people show up to each year. In addition to working with the Salmon Runs, Irene was integral in creating the Cancer 2x2 walks and also the Sudden Infant Death Syndrome Bike-a-thon in Cordova. I want to briefly, if it's okay, share a few anecdotes I learned from the family. Her daughter Kim shared that on the boat, Dad may have been the admiral or the captain of the boat, but Mom was always the admiral, and I got a kick out of that one. She also shared that everybody in town knew Irene, and it was common for people to call her Grandma Irene in town, and she liked to honk her horn every time she saw runners on the road and you know, wave at them. And one thing I want to note to you guys is in your packet you'll see Irene, the spelling of Irene's name, it's always done with a little case I, and this is how she did it in life. I promise that's not a spelling error. This is something that her children grew up with her doing, and I think a friend spoke of it as it is. It was diminutive in figure, and she didn't consider herself larger than everybody else, and so spelled it with a little I. And the family has requested that on any signage it be spelled with a little I. The bridge in question is 9.5 miles between Cordova City Center and the airport. The bridge crosses the Scott River and looks back towards the Scott Glacier. Notably, the area that this bridge goes over, both Cordova Marathon and Half Marathon Salmon Runs go over this area. But also this area is kind of known as a local hub for recreation. It's got the 9 Mile Sand Pile, which is an area for picnicking and other activities. It's also got four-wheeling and snow machining and Forest Service trails nearby, so the families identified this as a really great hub and a place where families go and recreation is common and a place that Irene would have loved to have been. In your packets, there are two resolutions, one from the City of Cordova and one from the Native Village of Eyak supporting this bill. Additionally, there is a fiscal note from DOT associated with this bill. It's $10,158, and it's associated with the costs of materials for the signs, including the signage itself, the posts, and the sonotubes and the concrete in the installation. And with that, I will wrap up and be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you. I don't think I've got a question, but just in support of the bill, having seen this before, was it last session or maybe a couple of years ago when it didn't quite make it through. Thought then and thought today that the story is very uplifting. It's very appropriate to name a bridge after someone like this, a fairly ordinary citizen in one respect, but very much an unsung hero in another. And if memory serves, she became a runner like in her 50s, right? Late 50s or something like that?
It's close to that. Yeah, I don't know the number exactly.
Yeah, and just a Alaska Native background, if I remember right, or Alaska Native heritage, and in my book anyway, for somebody to become a walker in their late 50s is pretty amazing, but to become a runner and a very devoted runner and somebody who ran long distances is a pretty remarkable story in itself, and very much support the bill and would like to see it go through.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, I believe we have members of Irene's family online to testify. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to speak in support of this legislation. I think that anytime we can recognize an outstanding Alaskan woman, that's an effort that I am happy to support. So I'm excited to hear from the family, and I appreciate the very respectful and I think appropriate remarks that you've made about Ms. Weber. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. William Weber Sr., are you online?
I'm online.
Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Could you repeat that, please?
William Weber Sr., if you could state your name and begin your testimony.
Okay, my name is William Weber Sr., and speaking about my wife, Irene, which you guys are working on. Anyway, we're both married, Fisher people. We were born on boats, both of us, basically. Anyway, by the time we turned 21, we ended up getting married and start making babies. We had three of them, boy, girl, boy. Anyway, she was a good, hard worker. She had to work in the canneries. She had to do anything she can just to live in those days, not being born with lots of money or no money, probably. But anyway, she, in her 40s or something like that, she started jogging. We had lots of problems. I was fishing and gone lots of times up to Bering Sea and all over, so she ended up being home a lot by herself. So anyway, she ended up starting to drink a little bit. She wasn't a drunk, but she started drinking and stuff. And by the time I got done with my life fishing, she needed a lot of help. But she checked herself in rehab in Juneau and went through that for months, if you remember anything. But she did all on her own. She had the courage to go ahead and take care of herself, save her marriage, because I was about ready to run then. But she went and checked herself out there for several months, come home, and we rebuilt their love again and continued. We end up with three children. How many kids? About 10, 12 grandkids, stuff like that. And during her time, all that time, she was jogging and started running to take care of her own health after drinking and everything. And she started a Corova running club and a lot of clubs in Alaska, watching what Irene did with the club and how she got to run in, got our little town running, because nobody did those things some days. You know, they're talking 50, 60 years ago. It just wasn't a common thing to do. And anyway, she started a Corova running club, and a lot of people come from all over. It was just amazing. From New York, from all over, people would come in to drop in Corova and run that 26-mile run out there in the wild. For most people, it's wild country, with bears and everything on the highway. She's quite a little lady, and she passed away about 3 years ago, and really miss her. I'm 84 now. She died when she was 81. So we had a lot of good years, most of her are based on running for her and working out of boats and raising her children. Damn good woman, I tell you. Go ahead. I'm done. Thanks for writing up things. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. We appreciate you sharing her story with us today. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we will move to Kim Aspeland, who is Irene's daughter. Ms. Aspeland, please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Kim Aspeland, and I am Irene and Bill's daughter. And my mom was very inspiration for a lot of people, especially to me, because like Dad was saying, back in the day when she did have a very short time of a drinking problem, it was during my high school years. And anyway, she ended up quitting and ended up to be like the perfect mother in a lot of ways. I come back from college and I was a runner, and she asked me if I could teach her how to run, and I did. And she took off and left me in the dust, and she was running marathons and I only did half marathons. And as she was rebuilding her life, actually it was 39 years sobriety. When she quit, she quit. And whenever she did anything, she did it with 110% passion. And, you know, she was a very strong Aleut woman, born in Alomar. and from a big family herself. And, yeah, we worked hard on the boat every summer, and she's the root of our whole family. She held us all together, and we all miss her very much. And the naming of this bridge would just be so perfect, because the Cordova Running Club, the Alaska Salmon Runs, continues to this day, and people remember her. And to run past that bridge or come from the airport to town and see her name there, it's something that she inspired the whole community with her ambition, with the Cancer Society, the St. Jude's, raising money for St. Jude's. She started many different events in Cordova that still go to this day. She was named by the mayor a proclamation for Irene Weber Day years ago, being an Alaska Native woman. And she has just been an inspiring person. And I just would greatly be honored to have her name be placed in Cordova for her legacy to live on. And I appreciate everybody's time in listening to our family. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Asplund. Are there any questions? Thank you for sharing that story about your mom. Next online, we have Mike Weber, Irene's son. Mr. Weber, please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah, hi. My name is Mike Weber. I'm Cordova, son of Irene Weber. I'm in support of the HB 27 bill, and it's very nice to hear Sarah and some of the representatives there speaking kind words of my mother. She was a very small lady, like 5 foot, but she had a big heart, and she was recognized with her big heart by thousands of people, just not only in our community, but since she was also known for being a very strong and very competitive commercial fisher person throughout the state. People would see her running on beaches wherever they traveled. You know, they would go to Prince William Sound and fish the herring, and you'd see her on a short little 200-yard beach running back and forth for hours. And how inspirational is that? And then they would travel, you know, 36, 40 hours, get to Lower Cook Inlet, and they would drop my mom off on the beach, and she would be running the beaches there as well. And then they would make their circuit farther down the line to Bristol Bay area, an area called Togiak, where they would also be fishing enough for the herring, and you would see her in many different beaches there as well. She touched many people's hearts just through her inspiration. I myself really think it's a huge honor to be able to see my mom's name on a bridge, because the people's names on the Copper River Highway are veterans that passed, and I really think it, you know, these guys are heroes. And I also consider my mother as a hero too, on what she'd done for our community and many other things in life. For me and my family, all my kids and grandkids, you know, we're already saying hi to my mom every time we cross this bridge, and that we love her. We're already calling it the Irene Weber Bridge. And, you know, with your guys' support on this bill, it really, it's a touching time. We're all still, you know, connected very strong with our mom. But just to see her name, you know, is going to really, really make a statement in our mind. So I thank you for letting me speak, and thank you to the speakers as well. I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. We appreciate you sharing that with us today. Are there any questions? Seeing none, our final testifier today is Katrina Hoffman, Irene's daughter-in-law. Ms. Hoffman, are you available?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, this is Katrina Hoffman in Cordova, Alaska. I'm Irene Weber's daughter-in-law and Mike Weber's wife. And I've had the privilege of coming into this community more recently than the Weber family, who's really just been in this region since before recorded time. And I, you know, as an outsider looking in who became part of this wonderful family, have just been so impressed with the legacy that Irene left behind. And so I can speak to having witnessed the impact that she's had on hundreds of people who now come as, you know, as locals and independent tourists from all over the world to participate in the wild salmon run that Irene founded. And as Kim mentioned, some of the cancer fundraising efforts that she was so integral to go on to this day. And I cannot say anything to expand on the family's wonderful comments, but I can speak as someone who was adopted into the family, that Irene is a woman worth honoring, and it would be awesome to have her name on a bridge on the Copper River Delta that goes over this tributary in the Scott River Valley, looking up towards the glacier, with fireweed on either side of the road at different times of the day, with families that are out there four-wheeling and cross-country skiing and bike riding and hunting. And it's just a place we celebrate living in, and it's a place that would really honor this woman whose life deserves to be celebrated. So thanks for the opportunity to speak on her behalf.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. We appreciate those comments. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you all for your kind testimony. We have Matt Walker, statewide traffic safety engineer, and Mike Lessman, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, online to present the fiscal note. And we also have Michael Partlow from Legislative Finance if there are questions. Mr. Walker and Mr. Lessman, would you please put yourself on the record and speak to the fiscal note?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This is Mike Lessman, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Are you hearing me well?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, the fiscal note, as Ms. Perman alluded to, probably speaks to it for itself. I guess I just wanted to point out that the costs here are all material costs. We're not suggesting that this is time of our maintenance and operations staff. They're going to go out and conduct their work and be involved in duties 8 hours a day, no matter what their task may be. So this is all material costs. You might have noticed, or others may have noticed, from last year's House Bill 186 that the cost of these signs did go up a little bit. I believe it's an approximate 5% increase, and that's primarily just the rise of costs of aluminum itself. There are lots of things to consider, Madam Chair, when DOT constructs and places traffic signs. We do that in accordance with a document that the Federal Highway Administration put out. It's called the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, or as we like to say, the MUTCD. We also have an accompanying manual, the Alaska Traffic Manual, that speaks to some of our more unique and specific circumstances here in Alaska. That's an augmentation to the federal document. I guess one other thing I'd say about that MUTCD, that is the nation's, it's not just Federal Highway Administrative approved, it's really the nation's guidebook, if you will, supported by all the state DOTs across the nation. You folks are familiar with the National Conference of State Legislatures that give you good research information and best practices guidelines. State transportation agencies belong to ASHTO, which is the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. That would be a good comparable to NCSL, and they also approve of the MUTCD. I do have a lifeline with me, our statewide traffic safety engineer, Matt Walker. If you have specific questions about the construction of these signs, I know that he can help me out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lessman. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. And I will now open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 27? Seeing none, is there anyone online that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. Amendments to House Bill 27 are due to my office by Sunday, March 28th at noon. My intention is to take up amendments and pass the bill out on Monday if possible. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could make a comment here, because yes, I sense we're drawing to a conclusion on today's meeting. I'd just like to compliment the Weber family for their inspirational testimony, very articulate. I feel like I know Irene. And so I'd just like to thank the family members for calling in today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lebon. I couldn't agree with you more. And with that, our business is concluded for today. Our next meeting is Monday, March 29th. We will hear from the Alaska Travel Industry Association and continue our work on House Bill 128 and House Bill 27. With that, at 2:32 p.m., we are adjourned.